98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bigley Blast.
Not all apologies are alike. Not all of them are sincere. Some people are sorry because they got caught. Some people are sorry because they don't get their way. Patrick Peterson transcended all of that. His apology at the Waste Management Phoenix Open on Wednesday was brilliant because it felt organic, because it felt like Peterson looked at an adoring crowd going nuts over his golf shot on a beautiful, balmy day in Arizona when the rest of the country was freezing and thought, you know what? I really like this place. I really like these people. And I really feel bad for making them angry with me last season. But here's the thing. Peterson did not have to apologize. By the end of the 2018 season, we all felt the numbing incompetence of a boring and bad head football coach, and we intuitively understood Peterson's mindset. But the fact that Pat P wanted to apologize to make sure we were all good and rolling ahead together, that tells me a lot about Peterson, and it made me do a lot more than accept his mea culpa. It made me like him even more. All right, today's Bickley Blast, every Bickley Blast, brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Two great locations, one great experience. Check them out online at chapmanbmw.com. All right, second half of the program, we got a lot coming your way. We got Casey Jacobson, who's going to join us, talk some Pac-12 basketball.
Paul Bissonnette.
Paul Bissonnette to talk about the Coyotes. Yeah, stretch run for them begins on Saturday. Before you move on, you're a big hockey guy.
Mr. Coyote, they call Luke.
And I really respect your takes on the Coyotes. Reset the Coyotes where they're at, a perfect 23-23-4, probably better than they should be given all their injuries, team with a legitimate shot at the postseason. What do you think of it? Do you think they can pull this off?
It depends when they get these guys back, and specifically if Oliver Ekman-Larsson's out for a while, that would be the seventh main player that's out for long term, and in my mind, he's the most important. If you go through the players that are missing significant time, they're all the wrong players to be missing time. So it is right. Remarkable that they're only 2 points, which is the hockey equivalent of a game out of a playoff spot. Rick Tocchet has the right attitude infused in that locker room. I definitely think they would have made the playoffs if even like three of these guys that are out are healthy. It's going to be tough down the stretch, but they're right there. They have the attitude and the resiliency they haven't had in the last 2 or 3 years.
Another thing that we're doing today is the Bickley and Murata Show Media Day.
Oh, yeah,
so
that's
last
right.
Chance, if you want to call in with questions, 602-200-2744. Call now and leave a question for Bickley, for Luke. I guess you can leave one for Vince, even though he's not here anymore. 602.
Now, that's just temporarily. You don't mean he's not here, period.
No, I
right.
Hope not. He didn't look good, though.
Right.
I mean, 602-200-2744. Call and leave a voicemail for the show. You could ask a sports question, a pop culture question, a life question, anything you want to ask the guys. This is your chance.
I don't want to be that guy, but what are you talking about? What are we doing? What's this? We have to answer whatever the question is.
Well, you showed up for show prep,
well,
Luke.
I showed up,
well,
I guess.
Yeah, that's not his fault. Don't get on him.
I know.
Don't get on him. Yeah, basically, you know, on media day or opening night, it just football players answer every question from every media person, from
yes.
every, and they're not even media people anymore. It's just a circus.
It is a circus, yes.
So we opened up a voicemail line for people to ask us anything they wanted,
right,
as
like
if
this.
We were the subjects of media.
I'm in. I like
so
this.
There you go.
And just also to reset, Luke is in because Vince, under the weather, tried to come in today, tried to bear down through it, but could not.
Why do you feel compelled to make that clear?
Well, just in case people weren't listening at the beginning of the show, wonder why is Luke in? And why are we talking about Vince in the past tense?
Oh, okay.
I want to know why you used the phrase bear down. That just seemed totally unnecessary on this
did.
Day of all
Very
days.
Gratuitous.
Yeah.
Our listeners are the absolute greatest. Some of them have tweeted out the whole concept of can you hear when somebody's got eye issues? We have received a picture of Gollum from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
My precious. Okay, so we've seen, which is good. We've seen Bob Costas from the Olympics, which to me, I have a lot of respect for Bob Costas. I could not believe that man allowed himself to sit in front of a camera during the Olympics with his eye looking like that. It just made me want, it just made my skin crawl.
It's tough to watch.
Really is.
Yeah.
I had pink eye once, and it got so bad, I could feel it starting. It was at a Suns game, and David Stern was at the arena that night. So he did a press conference. He had Adam Silver sitting next to him. Jarrett, you should have been there. The jokes would have been flowing. and I could feel my eye closing. And if you ever had bad pink eye, you know what it's, you know how contagious it is, and you know how just perfectly awful it is. My eye was closing by the second, and I finally asked a question. He looked at me like, dude, you all right?
This was David Stern?
Oh, David Stern.
And then he got so mad he just moved the Sonics to Oklahoma City for no reason?
Exactly. Okay. So Vinny is legitimately ill.
Those are the tweets you're getting because I'm getting angry tweets about my Tom Brady.
We're going to get back into that in about 12 minutes because there's more to be talking about here with Tom Brady. Let's talk about Patrick Peterson and the Arizona Cardinals once again. For those who did not hear, Patrick Peterson showed up at the Waste Management Phoenix Open Pro-Am. Did not have Larry Fitzgerald in tow, but he went and played golf. Got on 16, striped the shot because he's an excellent golfer, okay? Then he asked the guy, the master of ceremonies, for the microphone, and he said this.
I just want to apologize to everybody for asking for that trade in the middle of the season. I'm here to stay, baby.
There are moments when I get very depressed at the nature of this sports town because we're all waiting for this to become one team, one town. We're all waiting for the transient fans to put all their attentions inward, and it's going to take a while. I mean, I heard Doug Franz this morning talking openly about how he's a Washington Redskins fan.
Yeah.
Right?
A lot of people.
Gambo's
like
a New York fan. If there's a lot of people like that, and that's just so odd to me.
Which team of the four in town do you think is the closest to unifying everybody? I don't have an answer to that, but I think the Diamondbacks are the furthest. Just by the nature of it being baseball.
By the nature of being baseball, I think the Diamondbacks, I don't know if they're further away than the Coyotes just because of what hockey means to this market. But I also know that the Coyotes, given the nature of hockey, could change all of that with a couple of deep postseason runs.
That's the thing with the Coyotes is it's a smaller fan base, obviously, but they've all been galvanized by having to, it's been us against the world. Are we going to keep our team, this, that, versus Canada? And you've got the generation of fans that have grown up just watching the Coyotes while their fans are Blackhawks or Red Wings fans.
I say two things about the Coyotes all the time. The difference between regular season hockey and postseason hockey is greater than any other difference in any other professional sport. Two different sports entirely. Playoff hockey is just, you can't get enough of it, and it's exactly what the Coyotes have not given this valley.
They haven't gotten enough of it.
They haven't barely given any of it. And you know what it's like. You've spent a lot of time in hockey rinks. So have I. You walk into a hockey rink in the middle of a season, and you're like, man, is it cold, right? Yeah. You go to a morning skate, man, is it cold. You stage a playoff run, and you're bringing people to a hockey rink here in the middle of May?
Yeah.
Sign me up for that. We got to do that once, and I remember, this is great. It's 108 outside. Everybody's dying. We get to go cover a playoff hockey game.
It is fantastic.
And so we've never experienced that.
I'm totally distracted by that now.
Yeah. So I think the Coyotes can do that, and I think if they did that, we'll get a fairer read exactly on what they mean to us.
But your larger point, I mean, it's certainly there. Every sport, every team in this town, it's like, yeah, I want the Cardinals to win. They're starting to struggle. All right, what are the Giants doing?
What are the Bears doing? What are the Redskins doing? And all that kind of stuff. And then you just think about the nature of any sports market. Its leading voices are not even fans of the teams here. And where else do you get that? Nowhere. And it drives me insane sometimes.
Yeah.
But yesterday, moments like yesterday make me feel awesome because it's a moment where a guy that we have loved is loving us back and saying, sorry for making you mad at me. Let's go do this together. And I'm like, yes, let's do it.
I really like everything about it. It was a 6-second soundbite, and I like everything about it. One, it's him admitting, yes, I asked for a trade last season.
Yeah.
He's not dancing around it. He's not saying this never happened. He's not saying I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's him apologizing for it, saying he was wrong to do that. And it's him saying, I'm now want to be here and I'm going to be here.
Yeah.
They threw a baby at the end
of it.
Just for
that's help. And he threw a baby at the end of it on top of it. That's why I love this. And again, I'm not trying to pass judgment on people who do not make Arizona teams their favorite. Okay. It's just not the way I roll. I live in a place like this, and I'm one of these guys where I want the communal vibe. Nothing makes me happier than when a sports team galvanizes us. That hadn't happened a lot, but when it has, the greatest moments of my professional career are all the collective that we've experienced here together. Super Bowl, 7 seconds or left, Suns, that stuff.
And doesn't it go both ways, too? Like, once you've had that, then when your team, when your team is struggling, it hurts. It hurts everybody. Yeah. You're not immediately going to your second option.
Yes, and it does great damage to a sports market when a team starts to struggle and then 50 to 75% of the fan base disappears. And then the people that really care are there. Who do I commiserate with?
It's just apathy at that
point. It's apathy at that point.
We saw apathy even with the Cardinals last year by the second half. And they gave us every reason to be apathetic, but
yes,
we saw it in the second half.
You did.
You wouldn't see that in some other markets.
No, and in great sports towns, they take that disappointment and that make some of the greatest times as a sports fan. Now, every market's different, okay? Like where I'm from, you go to Chicago. Say I moved to Chicago from Arizona. People would move back to a place like that. They would never go to a bar and say, hey, can you put the Diamondbacks on? I'm from Arizona. I'm a fan of those teams. You wouldn't do it because you knew better for your own safety than to do it. So it doesn't mean that there aren't transient fans in great sports cities. There are.
Oh, yeah.
They just keep their mouths shut.
Yeah.
Here, we've got a culture where it's perfectly acceptable to go on the air as a Redskins fan, to go into a sports bar and ask for the Timberwolves game. It's perfectly acceptable because it's who we are.
It's expected.
Doesn't mean we have to like it. I don't have to like it. I don't like it.
But I don't think it's
I've never met a Timberwolves fan in my life.
That's true. That part of your story doesn't
check out. I get where you were going.
No, I have. I've got Minnesota sports fans are great sports fans. They're loyal to the Timberwolves as well.
They're so nice, though.
They're close to Canada.
He put that game on there, eh?
It's not a knock on the fans in Arizona. It's just I think at a certain point you have to have either have a lengthy history, which we really only have with the Suns, or you've got to have some winning to build off of. And you just threw the one out there. I mean, you've got Larry Fitzgerald looking like he's scoring the winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. And you've got the Suns, you know, getting to the finals in 93, and you've got the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks have won a World Series, but they were just so new. And at that point, I have to imagine most Diamondbacks fans that were there, like 50% of them were also Cubs fans or Yankees fans or whatever, because the team was only, maybe not Yankees fans, but Red Sox fans or whatever. The team was only, what, 3 years old?
I know. It's so ridiculous that when we do get a team that does that, the impact it makes here is legendary. I came here in 93 as a member of the Chicago media. I was here for 7 days straight leading into the NBA Finals and during the first couple games in Phoenix. I went out every night and I ran into Suns. I didn't know the Suns players, but I would see the Suns players out in bars every night. And I thought, this is the damnedest thing I've ever seen. This basketball team is in the NBA Finals and they're out at night partying with fans here. And I thought, this is Harry High School kind of stuff. This is amateur hour out here. Since then, I have backed up and said, no, that's exactly wrong. It's the opposite is true. That is how in love with the Suns this market was, that it created an energy exchange that the guys on that team wanted to be a part of the people. Unlike other sports markets like Chicago, you would never see Michael Jordan out and about. He didn't want to hang with people. But those Suns in 93, they wanted to be part of it. That's how special it was. When the Cardinals made their roll to the Super Bowl, it was unbelievable. I told that story about me and Jarecki doing shots of tequila at 4 o'clock in the morning afterwards because we were winding down from an experience that blew our minds.
Yeah.
Mike D'Antoni's Suns, those playoff runs were unreal. The Diamondbacks, when they've had moments, that playoff game against Colorado, that ideal is there for us, and we've tasted it so infrequently.
And the Valley is so starved for that. Do you remember how we all felt after opening day of the Suns this season?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
It feels like a billion years ago.
Good, because it was.
But that was excitement, just general energy.
Yes.
That people felt after that first game.
Yeah, I'm not trying to just sit here and rip on LA, but I keep coming back to the fact that being there, it didn't really feel like they were. There wasn't that much buzz where I was that they were in the Super Bowl, and I couldn't help thinking, man, if the Cardinals were in the Super Bowl right now, it's all anybody would be talking about. Not anybody here in this building. Anybody. You walk down the street, anywhere in this city, people would be talking about the Cardinals.
Just remember
exactly
when the Cardinals did make the Super Bowl or when the Suns make a deep run in the playoffs. You see cars driving around with flags and bumper stickers and things in their windows.
Yes.
You see restaurants and stores with stuff put up all over the posters and signs and everything. It is amazing.
I knew the Cardinals had reached a special level right near the end of the Bruce Arians regime. I walked into the grocery store and there were Arizona Cardinal M&Ms for sale. And I thought, okay, this now we have become a real sports town.
Well, those are just for Van Halen because there was no green ones, right?
Right. They're only red and white.
Melts in your mouth, not in your hand, baby.
Come on, baby.
So just about the Cardinals and something we haven't really touched on with this Patrick Peterson news and him looking like all is forgiven.
Are you trying to drive the show again?
No, it's something I wanted to ask.
No, all right.
And
all right. I want to
just
hear
while
it.
We're still talking about it. When it looked like he was unhappy and maybe they were going to have to do something and he was forcing himself out of town, it brought them maybe they were going to be forced to rebuild when they didn't want to.
Yeah.
Is that, in retrospect, maybe what they should be doing? Like, how close are they actually to being a contender with Josh Rosen and David Johnson, both young still and so many holes and stuff? Could they possibly have been better off in the long term if they had to trade Patrick Peterson?
Not Peterson, though, right? I mean, there's other ways to rebuild. They've shown they can't get anybody even close to Peterson on the other side of Peterson. So that's to me, is the one guy they just absolutely could not afford to lose with him.
Yeah, right. And so the moment that he gave yesterday, that to me was one of those rare fleeting moments where we had this relationship that hit a wall with Patrick Peterson. He wanted out, didn't oblige him, he wasn't happy about it, played through the season, and now it's better. And now he's one of us again because it matters to him. That's what I'm talking about. It matters to him.
And to your point, it was communal. I mean, he said it to a bunch of Cardinals fans that,
yes,
again, it wasn't online, it wasn't over the radio, it wasn't over TV. He was looking right at him when he said it, and he didn't have to say it.
That is exactly right. So that is why that moment for a golf tournament on a Wednesday was so profound to me. So we're all good, Patrick.
That's it?
That's it.
That's all it took. UFC Fight Night is coming to Talking Stick Resort Arena on Sunday, February 17th, and we're giving you the chance to win tickets. Just head to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for complete details and to enter.
All right, we're going to revisit this topic I'm sure I'm going to be talking about it tomorrow. Luke has heard from Tom Brady fans, like I've heard from Tom Brady fans, who want to know what your problem is.
They've been.
I thought you laid it out there quite nicely.
I don't know. I thought that. Okay, one tweet in particular from Luis. Brady says he's the underdog and you rip him, but LeBron goes the other way, calls himself the GOAT, and gets scrutinized. What's your point, guys, besides straight hatred? I didn't scrutinize LeBron for calling himself the greatest of all time. I put Brady in that class, obviously. Yeah. And if you're in that class, you have to earn your way there, which he has. But then you got to act like you're the greatest of all time. Or if you think Montana's better, then Brady's the second greatest, whatever. Yep. He's on the very short list of greatest of all time. I don't want to see the greatest of all time
approaching
acting
top five is what Dan thinks.
Okay, well, whatever.
Well, don't derail him because he's making a real valid point.
Either way, I don't want to hear the greatest of all time or somebody in that class talking about how they're the underdog when they beat the Chargers, who never win anything in the playoffs. Sorry.
Right.
Literally through Brady's entire career, that which just happened a couple weeks ago, and of course, Julian Edelman and other Patriots that you would expect to pile on did the same, and oh yeah, we're definitely the underdog. We're going to run with that now. Nobody believes in us. Who doesn't believe in the Patriots? How many of us picked them to win the Super Bowl before the season began? And I've made this point before, but I'll make it again. They're my pick to win next year's Super Bowl too. Until I see otherwise.
Yeah.
They're in the AFC Championship every single year. They play in a terrible division. They have the greatest coach of all time, and they have one of the best quarterbacks of all time. They're going to be in the AFC Championship next year too.
Dan Shaughnessy, when he joined us, was it 2 days ago, Jarrett? Dan Shaughnessy said the thing he liked about the end of that Chiefs game was that game-winning drive in overtime from Tom Brady included some real big-time throws. Dan Shaughnessy's words, it wasn't throwing the ball to a guy 4 feet from you. That's the Patriots' offense. That is why what Luke said earlier, 60, 70%, what is it in terms of the success of New England? To me, I'm not a big fan of Bill Belichick, the person, but I am in awe of him. In awe.
Let me ask you this, then. Maybe this is the best way to measure it. And I know we're going to anger more Brady fans if you say he's only 30% of the success, but they've had so much success that 30% of that is perfectly fine. When Brady retires, do you really see the Patriots dropping off that much? I don't.
I don't either. If you have Bill Belichick, he is going to find a way to beat you most Sundays.
He's no youngster, though.
No,
their retirements might kind of coincide with each other.
They
then
might.
There'll be a drop-off.
But part of me says that since Tom Brady has played this card very early on, being smug this year for the first time in ways we've never seen him, being passive-aggressive, being so yearning for proper credit and appreciation that I wonder if Bill Belichick isn't sort of itching now to show what he can do without Tom Brady. And let's be honest here. Tom Brady threw a fit to get Jimmy Garoppolo traded because he was afraid of Bill Belichick doing exactly that.
Well, and
saying goodbye to Tom Brady and winning with a kid.
Maybe that's the best example we can use. Like, Garoppolo was fine in San Francisco. His numbers weren't great, but he was winning games. He doesn't have a whole lot to work with, and then he gets hurt this year. But if let's say the Patriots go out and win the Super Bowl this Sunday, which they're going to do, and then Brady retires, and Garoppolo is still the backup, and the Patriots were going into next season with Jimmy Garoppolo, and he was basically an unknown. We had seen him a little bit, but we know about him what we know now. Would you pick against the Patriots next year to at least make a deep playoff run? Like, maybe they don't win the Super Bowl. Maybe they get to the Super Bowl and lose it. But if, as long as they have a decent quarterback in there with everything else in place,
he's going to find a way to beat you.
To me, Brady's best year was the year they lost to the Giants the first time in the Super Bowl. When he finally had a weapon like Randy Moss,
oh, yeah,
and he was a threat, like he was throwing
the undefeated
field.
Year.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's true. But the rest of
first couple Super Bowls, it's like exactly like Shaughnessy said. He was throwing little short passes to Kevin Falk, and their defense was winning the games.
Doink, 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 doink. They're systematic. Their head coach has figured out everything. Their special teams are the greatest year after year after year. Why is that? Duh. I wonder. It's not Tom Brady. Their offensive line kicks butt every year. Why is that? It's not Tom Brady.
I just think it's funny when you look at a team that has six Super Bowls, could have eight, and give all the credit to one guy. And I understand that's the nature of the quarterback position, and we've seen it the other way, where if a team struggles, you just blame the quarterback completely. But
the reason is because he's the one consistent thing that's been there for all the Super Bowls.
Belichick, though, too.
And Belichick, but I'm saying of the players, all the other players have switched around and moved around.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm not trying to diminish what Tom Brady has done. I didn't like the whole...
And why is
playing
it,
the underdog role?
And I think you, the way you express that is just perfect, because you can't be the greatest of all time and act like the underdog. And like you said, every time he wins a Super Bowl, he's got this look like he's never played football before.
He does. He does look like he's every time they win the Super Bowl, he looks like he just saw a football game for the first time and is like, I love this. I want to play more of this.
And memo to some of you Patriot fans out there. I've got friends who are Patriots fans who I say the same stuff to them. Now, I say it in a more joking manner. The Patriot fans out there who can't deal with people disliking Tom Brady, you need to get a grip, okay? Be happy that you've got all these rings and Super Bowl championships. Let us hate on your quarterback, okay? Because really, you're getting the good end of that deal in the long run.
There was a time when Boston sports fans would love that, too.
Yes.
Go ahead, hate on Brady. We're going to keep winning.
The vitriol I've gotten from... I got killed by somebody on Twitter, and I'm like, why would somebody be that mean-spirited? I look at his avatar. It's a picture of Tom Brady. I'm like, oh, there you go. Let us hate Tom Brady, Patriot fan. It's the least you can do for us, okay?
You're going to keep winning every year.
And like I pointed out yesterday, it's kind of good that he's in the Super Bowl, because it gives you something to root against in a neutral field.
Something to be said for that.
See, I never rooted against them until this year. This year, I'm absolutely going to be rooting against them while they win 38-10.
There you go. Pac-12 Network, Fox Sports 1 analyst, former Sun, former Stanford star, Casey Jacobson joins us next to talk some college basketball. Luke Lipinski filling in for Vinny. I'm Dan Bickley. You're listening to 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Welcome back. Dan Bickley, Luke Lipinski filling in for Vinny. Showed up for work today with one eye. Well, he had two eyes. One of them was open. So there you go. That's how Luke Lipinski was rousted out of bed, and here we go.
I woke up to the sound of Jarrett Carlin on my phone. So
scary.
My whole year might be thrown off.
Frightening. All right, tonight in Tempe, big basketball game for Bobby Hurley. Will this be the game that he finally beats Arizona? Our great pleasure to welcome in from the Pac-12 Network, Fox Sports 1. He is the one, the only, Casey Jacobson. Hello, Casey. How are you?
Dan and Luke, it's a pleasure to be on. I'm doing great.
All right, do you agree that in the context of Bobby Hurley and what he's building, that you got to beat Arizona at some point, and that pretty much means here and now tonight?
Well, if you live in the state of Arizona, I would say yes. But look, he got them to a NCAA tournament last year and didn't beat them. Isn't that the whole purpose of this whole thing, to build a respectable program that is nationally known, that gets to the tournament every year? If you can do that without beating Arizona, then who really cares? But if you live in and around Tempe and Tucson and Phoenix, then yeah, it's a big deal, and I get that. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and you know, I watched UCLA and USC battle each other out. Yeah, it's a rivalry. There's emotion attached to it, so I get it. For Arizona State fans, you know, Bobby Hurley's done a fantastic job turning that program around, but you would like to beat your bitter rival at least once. Like, look, you don't have to go 6-0 against them over the last couple of years, but you can't go 0-6. That's tough.
Casey, when you look at the Pac-12 right now, I know there's a lot of talk that they may only get one bid. I mean, I feel like they'll at least get two. What in your mind is missing from this conference right now, though? Because that's still, even if they get two or even three, that's lower than we're used to seeing.
Oh, there's a lot of, I don't know where to start with that one. there's a lot of things that are missing. There's a void of talent right now. And this is cyclical. It happens. Like, programs go in and out of years, but it's been kind of 2 years that it hasn't been that good for the Pac-12. As far as, you know, Oregon hasn't been nearly as good since they lost Dylan Brooks and that the team that went to the Final Four two years ago. The FBI investigation certainly touched the Pac-12 more than it touched any other conference that I can think of in my mind. But big picture for this conference this season, people are talking about it possibly being a one bid league to the NCAA tournament. I don't see it that way. I do see at least two, and there's a possibility for three. But if three happens, here is my take. Washington is pulling away. They're the most consistent team, and I think they will remain so. ASU, Arizona State, has the highest ceiling, and I include even Washington. Arizona State, when I say highest ceiling, when everybody's healthy and everybody's playing to their potential and they're making good decisions, what is the best version of them? I think Arizona State is the most talented team when they're right. But they are wildly inconsistent because some of their best players and some of their the guys that shoot the ball the most on offense are really unpredictable. I'm talking about Remy Martin and Lou Dort. Those guys, when they make shots, they're amazing. Yeah. When they miss, they'll shoot you out of a game. And that's kind of what it's like. But Arizona State and Washington have to raise their level of play, keep it consistent, and then maybe somebody surprises you in the Pac-12 tournament. Maybe it could be a USC or a UCLA. And in that scenario, I think you can get three teams in.
Casey, how did we get to this point in time with a conference that used to be just, I don't know, at least top-heavy in terms of excellent programs? How did we get to this point?
Yeah, so what you mentioned, Dan, is important. Every conference in America, and this is true in football and basketball, your flagship programs, even in a quote-unquote down year where talent maybe isn't as rich in California or whatever, your flagship programs, and in basketball, we're talking UCLA and Arizona. Those are the perennial powers that get NBA players every single year. They have to carry the flag. They can't have down years. It's just that way. Duke never has a down year. North Carolina never has a down year. In the Big 12, it's Kansas every single year. And so even if you're the Stanfords and Cals, who are really, really struggling, Oregon State can't get to a consistent winning program or gets to tournaments each and every year, the best programs still keep you relevant. They keep people talking about the Pac-12. And this year, both these programs are having the worst years that I can remember. I mean, I've only been a broadcaster now for 5 years covering the conference, but this is the worst that I've seen UCLA and Arizona collectively.
Talking to Pac-12 Network, Fox Sports 1 analyst Casey Jacobson. Casey, I know you said that ASU in your mind has the highest ceiling when everybody's playing their best basketball. Is that where you would go then with an answer to this question of, if the Pac-12 teams, if they get two or three teams or whatever it is into the tournament, which one is built to actually do some damage in the tournament and maybe get to the second weekend or even deeper?
Sure. I do think that Washington's going to have a really good chance of beating some people when they get in. You know, we talk, so Mike Hopkins is their head coach, and he coached under Jim Boeheim, the head coach at Syracuse, for over 20 years. And they're known for their 2-3 zone. Mike Hopkins brought that zone to Washington, and it's been amazing. And you've seen just a couple of years ago, Syracuse barely made it into the tournament. It was 2016. Syracuse barely made it into the tournament, and then they end up going to a Final Four that year. Why? Because a very good zone, like good athletic active zones, are very difficult to penetrate. And when you take that kind of defense to a huge arena, neutral floor in an NCAA tournament where guys are already kind of nervous, you see what happens. Like, teams can't make shots against Syracuse in the tournament, and they advance. I feel like Washington, with Matisse Thybulle, who's one of the best defensive players in a zone that I've ever seen, honestly, and some really nice veteran pieces, they're not a very good offensive team. They struggle at times, but they are absolutely a team that can shut you down offensively. And I feel like on a big stage, big arenas where it's hard to shoot, trust me, I know, you try to shoot three-pointers in an arena that holds like 30,000 people, it's more difficult than trying to shoot at the McHale Center or Wells Fargo Arena. It just is. So I do think that if Washington gets some good matchups, they absolutely have the potential. Arizona State, yes, they do have potential, but man, they are so wild. It's just hard for me to imagine them winning like 3 games in the tournament. I'll believe it when I see it, but they are capable.
All right, last thing really quickly, your take on Zion Williamson. Are you buying all the hype?
Oh, yeah, no question. Look, and so I understand that his 3-point shot is kind of gross and ugly. I understand that. But he does everything else well. And then here's the other thing. We talk about this on, you know, studio shows, Pac-12 and FS1. There are players that have what you can't teach, Dan. Like, a player with the physical gifts that Zion has comes around every 10 to 15 years. And I was drafted by the Suns in 2002, and they had a player like that. His name was Amari Stoudemire, who came straight from high school to the NBA and was physically dominating guys. Like, he dominated Kevin Garnett his rookie year. I watched it with my own eyes. When you have that, when you have what you can't teach, that translates. It does. And not only that, if you've watched Zion, is he not a really good defensive player? Is he not a good passer, an underrated passer who plays well with his teammates? So don't tell me about what he can't do. Yeah, I understand. I can see that he can't shoot, but he does everything else well to help you win games.
Thank you, Casey. It's always a pleasure talking to you, getting your insight on college basketball. You are the man. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great week.
All right, bud.
Thanks,
Casey Jacobson joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Good stuff from Casey there. All right, coming up on the other side, the NBA team in town. They've got a few days off. Will they find a point guard? Will they find a direction? Will they find a home in our hearts again? We'll see.
Wow, that was beautiful.
Thanks. I'm trying to get poetic there, and I'm like, this sounds ridiculous. He's Luke Lipinski. I'm Dan Bickley. We're back right after this.
All right, now look, Father.
Do you know how disciplined you have to be to have six-pack abs? Do you know how much I don't want to live like that? I can't live like that.
Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
All right, welcome back. Dan Bickley, Luke Lipinski. We're going to talk some NBA basketball. We're going to take a little turn off the Phoenix Suns. Was just alerted to a dude named Brad Turner, who covers the Lakers for the Los Angeles Times. Okay? He tweeted out a lot of very interesting information. Now, when we left this conversation yesterday, Anthony Davis, trade block, Lakers, Boston Celtics, bidding war. I think by now most basketball fans understand the parameters. Because of a rule in the NBA, the Boston Celtics cannot get involved in any trade talks for Anthony Davis until July 1st. Most people assume that if it got to that point, the Boston Celtics win because they can offer the most.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that.
The NBA has the most complicated rules when it comes to contracts and when you can negotiate and when you can make a trade.
Yeah, and yet eventually everything comes back to Boston versus Los Angeles. You know what I mean? Yeah. Eventually it all circles back to that.
Yep.
All right, so that in and of itself is the reason why a normal good guy, level-headed guy like Anthony Davis chose to incur a $50,000 fine and let it be known, I want out now, to give the Lakers a heads up, a start on getting him, which kind of tells you, at least it tells me, where Anthony Davis wants to end up.
Yeah.
Okay, so at that point in time, Greg Popovich made a phone call to Dell Demps, the GM of the Pelicans, and said, be careful when dealing with the Lakers. You're getting set up here. Be careful. Now, Popovich has got some experience with this, with the Kawhi Leonard situation.
And he handled it pretty well.
And he handled it real well. Got DeMar DeRozan out of it, and now Kawhi Leonard might not get out of Toronto. All right, so Magic Johnson finally got a hold of Dell Demps, and according to Brad Turner, offered Demps with five different trade scenarios, five of them. They have told the Pelicans, we want to get a deal done now. Get back to us with the deal you like the most, but don't wait until this summer, because by then we're gone. We're not going to be bidding against the Celtics. We're going to focus on other free agents. Okay? So you see where this whole thing is going.
Yeah, I mean, who's the better free agent out there than Anthony Davis, unless it's like Kevin Durant? Yeah,
but that's a year later.
Yeah.
They'd still have to wait another year. They're saying that they wouldn't trade for him. They just wait the extra year.
Wait the extra year at that point in time. So the Lakers let Dell Demps, and so this is an interesting case for the Lakers are, because they've played this game and lost it before. And they did that with Paul George.
Potentially with Kawhi Leonard.
And potentially with Kawhi Leonard. Although Kawhi is weird enough that we never quite knew. We thought he wanted to end up with LeBron, but you never know with Kawhi.
There was definitely rumors out there that he would rather go to the Clippers, which is very odd. Yeah, you're right. That's an odd
circumstance. But it definitely, the Paul George situation definitely fits that caution. If you want it, you better get on it now. The Lakers let Dell Demps know, like I told you, pick one of these five. The scenarios include Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, and a number one pick. Those are the big names.
No.
And Zubats, of course.
One of the trade scenarios would include all those guys.
Oh, okay.
Right? That's how I'm reading it. Let Demps know.
Well, then
one.
What would the other scenarios include? I mean, that's basically
that's
everybody good on the Lakers.
Hart, I guess, is a name that's not mentioned there.
Wait. They'd give up Ball, Kuzma, Ingram, Zubats, and in their first round
sources.
Pick.
Lakers let Demps know one of trade scenarios would include Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, Ivan Zubac, number one pick per source.
Now, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
That's a lot, but it's Anthony Davis. Okay, and
if you have LeBron and Anthony Davis, it doesn't matter. Well, those other guys.
Still, but absolutely,
and then you could still get another max free agent.
But if you're the Lakers, you look at Brandon Ingram, and he's the guy that you'd really... If you're a Lakers fan, and I'm not, but if you were, you can tolerate losing Lonzo Ball. You can tolerate losing Kyle Kuzma, even though he's a good player. But Brandon Ingram, and he just had a bust-out night the other night. That's the guy that you go, oh, I don't know. But their number one pick, what's that going to be worth?
Yeah, it's like a mid-first-round pick.
So... I guess if you're the Pelicans, you've got to now decide, will the Celtics trump this?
See, there's two things I want out of all this. If it's really he goes to Boston if it gets to the summer, or he goes to the Lakers if it gets done in the next week now, I obviously would prefer he went to the Celtics. Mm-hmm. That's one. Two, I really want Lonzo Ball to end up on some tiny town team where he's the backup point guard. In fact, that's more important to me than one at this point. The fact, and I don't know if it was your guys' show or if it was Burns and Gambo talking about yesterday, the fact that he is trying to surface here and dictate where he ends up,
yeah,
when he's done nothing in the NBA, he's had a few good games, he might be good. I wouldn't mind having him on the Suns, honestly, mm-hmm. But the fact that he's trying to dictate where he goes when he is an afterthought in any deal involving Anthony Davis is ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, Jared. You're about to say something.
If you're Anthony Davis and you really want to go to the Lakers, which we think he does, don't you do everything in your power to force it right now? Because, yes, you could go there as a free agent. But that's 2 years from now, and LeBron James will be 2 years older at that point. A guy who's already not that young right now. Don't you want to maximize your years getting to play with LeBron if you're Anthony Davis, and then just so really put the pressure on New Orleans right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not really putting pressure on them. I mean, he said that he wants the trade, but he's, by all accounts, acting about as good as you possibly can ever since then.
If you add Anthony Davis and LeBron James, you've got two of the top, what? Where do you want to rank Anthony Davis
top
in the
five.
NBA? Top five,
yeah.
Easily. Yeah. So it's, yeah, it's one of those situations, like you said, that it really doesn't matter. If you get him, it's just whether or not New Orleans wants to wait. Now, the Boston Celtics are prevented from even calling Dell Demps and saying, wait, because this summer I'll give you this. But would that stop? Do you think that would stop the Celtics from getting that information?
It'd be the first case of tampering ever in the NBA.
Right, right, exactly.
All right, so meanwhile, while the Lakers are offering every young player they have to go all in and do something, James Jones was on Burns and Gambo yesterday, and they asked him if the Suns are facilitating any trades right now to try to get involved with a multiple team thing to get a point guard.
Like Lonzo Ball.
No, we haven't had those discussions. Our discussions have really been about what can we do to improve our team. But our jobs are to listen to every opportunity or examine every opportunity and see if there's some value for us. So whether or not we're a facilitator, whether or not we do a one-on-one deal, multi-team deal, I think what's available will dictate that.
Do you think James Jones, the way that Ryan McDonough was ousted in Phoenix so quickly before the start of the season, the fact that most newer age front offices in the NBA are analytics driven, you think that some of Ryan McDonough's contemporaries might not easily pick up the phone, might ostracize a James Jones because of what went down in Phoenix? Do you think it'd be hard for James Jones to get involved and crack that network?
There might be something to that. It might be a little bit harder than it is for pick some random GM around the league. There might be something to that. I mean,
but you also heard when he was hired how respected James Jones is from the players and from people throughout the league.
What is your timeline for this team needing to get a point guard? And I know it's ridiculous we've ever even gotten to this
point. It's a
good
question. But, it's a really good question.
Again, like we were saying earlier, James Jones kind of, I know he was with the team before this year, but he got thrown into the fire, 9 days before the start of the season, and everybody looked at him and said, you must be getting thrown in because you're going to get us a point guard. Mm-hmm. It's tough to do mid-season. To me, I'm not going to flip out at this point if they don't have one a week from now.
Yeah.
But if they don't have one by the end of this summer, and not a guy that you drafted, like I want an actual NBA point guard that's already an NBA point guard, I don't know how you defend that if you don't have one after this summer.
Let me ask you that. To me, I hate saying this because we've been saying this for many, many off seasons in a row, but it really does come down to this off season because what went down with Ryan McDonough, you better really believe in James Jones to pull off the garbage that they pulled off and to run a skeleton crew for the majority of an NBA season. You better really believe in this guy, and this guy really better be worth it. And there better be some big names or some big moves coming to justify some of this wackiness, like gifting Tyson Chandler to LeBron James. There better be. So to me, that's going into next season, like you said. Now, throw this out here. Adrian Wojnarowski tweets out that Kristaps Porzingis expressing even more unhappiness with the Knicks. Would you call the Knicks right now and say, we will give you our number one pick for Kristaps Porzingis?
Yeah, but isn't he very shortly eligible for he's a free agent soon, isn't he?
The injury concern.
Because he was one.
The thing with him. It's the injury concern.
If you had asked me that question
a
year ago.
Coming off a left knee injury, and I don't know, man.
Well, remember when this came up? What was it, 2 years ago?
Yeah, when it was unthinkable to even consider trading the number four pick for anything in the world. I mean, mm-hmm. I would still trade Josh Jackson for Kristaps Porzingis, but the injury concern there is a lot more noticeable for me now than it was a year or two ago. But, you know, it goes back to what you were saying, and Jarrett, earlier in the show as well, too. Like, you look at what the Diamondbacks are doing and what they're going into right now, but you trust that front office to pull them out of it. Yeah, the Suns are kind of going off the beaten path here, making that move right before the start of the season and really waiting till basically the last second at this point to add a point guard and doing some crazy things. The problem is they don't have the trust built up where we look at them and we're like, yeah, they're doing their own thing, but let's see how this plays out. It's like, yeah, they're doing their own thing and we're going to end up with half a roster next year.
Jamal Crawford?
Yeah. No.
Oh, sorry, the phone.
Look, it's gratuitous that Jared plays it all the time, but that speaks to the inexperience of the Suns GM.
I just think James Jones is put in a real tough spot.
I would agree with that.
I blame him for 5% of this. But like I said, if we get past next summer,
I'm with that.
That goes up to 50%.
I agree with that, all of that. But there better be some reason behind his elevation. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
All right, 1 o'clock hour, we're going to turn our attention to the National Football League. and some Paul Bissonnette time. That's coming up 1 o'clock hour. Luke Lipinski, I'm Dan Bickley. You're listening to 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.